Welcome to the Akashic Reading Podcast, presented by AkashicReading.com, the place where you can learn to access your soul's wisdom, or at least stop digging the hole any deeper. I'm your host, Terry Uktana, and today we'll be talking about spirit guides and how you can connect with them directly, as well as how to improve the responses you get from them. Everyone has guides or beings who help them through an embodied life. Being embodied is not a natural state for any of us, in the same way being contorted into a small box is not a natural state for a contortionist. This is not to imply they shouldn't put themselves into the situation. They should if it's part of their routine and their career. The same with us. Being here has a purpose, but this doesn't mean it's easy. In fact, it takes a village. Just think. We're taking a non-corporeal form and marrying it to a physical form in highly intimate and integrated ways so they're seamless in their experience. We're setting things up so we experience life in a completely encased manner, which means learning to communicate consciously on all levels of communication and becoming ensconced in linear time as if that actually exists. The ultimate suspension of disbelief. In order to maintain this while at the same time living out a life which has been prepared, which has goals and contracts, which aims us at learning, becoming, and serving, we need a team. We need people who can fill in all the roles we can't be a part of while we're here, to take on the tasks we can't even remember exist, and to keep us focused. There are many types of beings people work with in this capacity, including angelic beings, ascended masters, Christed ones, specialists in specific subjects or tasks, and guides, just to name a few. Some beings come to us during dark times when we're in dire need. They can be the angel who saves us from an event where we surely would have been killed. They can be the support we need in the deepest dark night of the soul where we balance on the knife's edge. They can be a teacher who helps us remember or rediscover aspects of ourselves, such as latent healing gifts, which we can then use here. They can be the muse who inspires us to create or invent in ways we never would have done on our own. However, beyond all of this, or I should say before all of this, we have our team of guides. Each living person has a team, our entourage, as it were. They're beings who have agreed their primary purpose while we're embodied is to support us in this life. Each of us has a team which ranges from 3 to 7 beings. We contracted with these prior to embodying in order to fulfill specific roles, including physical functioning, relationships, logistics of living, spiritual path, service work, adding to the paradigm shift, among others. They're here to have our backs, fill in the gaps, help us to achieve what we're striving for at any given moment, try to keep us on the straight and narrow so we don't get too far off track, and provide the necessary stimulus for each phase of our embodied life. However, we have it laid out. In general, all guides have to work within specific guidelines. The first and most important of all is they cannot take away our free will. Now more than ever before, we have the ability to create a life which is unique to our personality and co-create the culture we participate in. This means we're also responsible for making sure what we choose to do doesn't hurt ourselves, doesn't hurt others, and doesn't make it impossible for others to do what they wish to do. Which are grand generalizations about very complex issues which keep lawyers all over the world busy 24 hours a day. Because whether you see the human race as totally incapable of getting along with each other or learning to be the best it could be through trial and error and tons of experience and centuries of case law, human beings are forever attempting to find middle ground between the individual's free will and the free will of others. In the Akashics, where everything is energy, all communication is direct through telepathy and empathy, and feedback is visceral as well as immediate. The behavior of souls are responsive and considerate. It doesn't mean we walk on eggshells, but we are much more integrated in how we live our lives, make our decisions, and in what motivates us and makes us happy. We actually live the principle that everyone else's happiness and well-being is ours because the truth of this is apparent in every experience we have. Therefore, when we're embodied and working with beings in the Akashics, talking with our guides or angels, working with librarians in the Akashic Library, exploring with our animal guides or totems, we need to keep the principles of free will in mind. Meaning no being in the Akashics will act to take away our free will in any situation, right down to the level of not speaking until spoken to. This is why we write contracts with our teacher, our guides and angels, or any other souls and beings we'll be interacting with during an embodied life to set the parameters of what activities are allowed, requested, and required. This is important to consider because if we've contracted with them not to interfere in our life concerning a certain subject or about a certain aspect of it, we can hammer them with questions, prayers, and supplications all we want, and we won't get an answer. Or the answer we'll get is a version of, "So sorry, but no." It's also why working in the Akashics is not like consulting an oracle, or, to be more precise, it's like consulting an oracle from ancient Greece or Sumeria. If you ask a general question such as, "What should I do now?" or "What's the meaning of my life?" the answer given will be vague and full of if-then statements because the Akashics can't tell a person what to do or what to choose. Each of us has free will to choose whatever we like regardless of the goodness or badness quotient. This is why I recommend to my clients and students that, whether working with guides, teachers, ascended masters, or other beings in the Akashics, they turn their questions around, utilizing free will in order to get the benefits of the wisdom available. We're not puppets they're controlling, nor are we children to be asking permission for things. Quite the opposite, in fact. We're free agents who can do whatever we wish in each moment. We are the ones in control, the ones in the driver's seat, and with boots on the ground, quite literally. Unless specifically contracted to do otherwise, guides are required to interact with us in a way which doesn't attract our conscious attention. No appearing visually to provide us messages from on high, writing things in the sand or the dust or the dirt in clear language, no whispering whole paragraphs in our ears like someone giving us the answer to the test on the sly, or popping whatever tool we need into our hands like a genie. That would be cool, but would also interrupt what we're trying to do here. There is a caveat to this. If we consciously reach out to contact them, then they're allowed to interact with us more directly, respond to requests, and become more directly involved in our life per our invitation. This is why it's important to know how to communicate clearly with them, so we're able to give them the permission they need to more fully interact. The way to understand this is to think of your guides not as enlightened spiritual beings who are acting as authorities or parents to you, but instead as employees who have hired to help you accomplish a task. Each of us is the leader of our team and the only one with authority to determine how we're interacted with and how much. Pleas for our guides to take on this responsibility will go unheeded since they can't. They're here to support us, but not to co-opt our lives. What's great is we can open up much clearer lines of communication. In fact, it's incumbent on us to do so. Somewhat a speak when spoken to situation, as it were. To do so, we must first understand who it is we're speaking to. While our guides work together as an integrated team for our best and highest good within the parameters of this life, there are general roles which they fulfill. There's a guide for the physical body who is tasked with making sure our body responds appropriately to our specifications in an embodied life. This is not to imply they're responsible for keeping us healthy. There are many reasons why not being healthy is something we planned for in a given life. Bodies are in part complicated messaging systems, which work in coordination with our soul to indicate where things are off balance. Although there are times when a cigar is just a cigar, often an illness or an injury happens in a certain way at a certain time to help us become in this lifetime. It can be a last-ditch means to make us slow down, stop doing what is driving us off our path. It can be something like a broken bone, which is attempting to help us change at the deepest structural level, whether this be to release old patterns or to encourage a new direction. It can be something like an illness pointing directly at what is most holding us back. This guide monitors us physically and supports our entire physical system, including all the ways in which we try to get our own attention through physical difficulties. However, if the body truly malfunctions or if we start to lose cohesion between the soul and the body in a way which is contrary to our soul plan, this guide will do all in its power to help us resolve the issues. There's also a guide for relationships. Not just intimate partner relationships, but all kinds, from soulmates to best friends to acquaintances to the checkout person at the grocery store. They support us in connecting with those we need to meet, helping us avoid those we shouldn't, Help us to deal with both to the best of our ability and, in general, make it possible for us to connect as fully or minimally as we're willing to do within any given moment of our embodied life and in the manner we so choose. They are in part responsible for the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher will come. Again, our free will is paramount, so they can't break us up from a bad relationship, they can't prevent us from stepping into things which aren't healthy for us, and they can't stop us from recreating our family of origin drama in our workplace. Sometimes these things are necessary to teach us what we're here to learn. Sometimes they aren't. What they can do is support us through them and help us when we're ready for something better. Another of our guides is all about logistics. This has to do with all the things we need to get along in a life, like food, water, shelter, and so on. This includes things like education and job, like transportation, geographic location, and on and on. Within the parameters of free will and what we set up for this lifetime, they work to make sure we have what we need when we need it. It would be nice if this guide could act like a fairy godmother or father and just wave a wand to give us everything we want or think we need. However, this isn't the case. In embodied life, the parameters we set for ourselves or we have created for ourselves through our choices in life can mean we don't have something when we think we need it. Others' choices play a part too, since embodied life is interconnected. We therefore may want to have something or be somewhere, and yet we can't accomplish it because others don't allow it to manifest for reasons of their own. Such is the nature of embodied life, where we're involved in an organic system in which we're one part of a greater whole. Within all this structure, our logistics guide works tirelessly to help us help ourselves in living an abundant life. Some people have guides who are specifically tasked to support them on a spiritual path. These guides usually have more leeway than others concerning direct interaction. Most spiritual paths contain an aspect of connection with the universe beyond embodied life in some fashion, so these guides can act through those methods once we become aware and accepting of them. This looks different depending on the religion or spiritual matrix the person is working with at the time. A good Catholic might have a vision or inspiration concerning a saint, while a yogi might have a transcendental moment and receive wisdom teachings or inspiration during practice. A Buddhist might receive message during meditation, while a Sufi might transform into a new phase of their life during the dance. No method is better than any other, more than one flavor of ice cream is better than another. We all have our favorites and preferences, but in the end, it's all ice cream. Spiritual path guides support us throughout our lives, but most often in a passive role, plus or minus specific events which might set things in motion or guide us in a direction in the early years, until later in life. Spiritual paths usually require a person to be past the age of childhood, where we are so focused on growing and learning to be human, and to be past the age of young adulthood, where we're learning connection with others through careers, education, and creating families. Once we've conquered all of that, to a certain extent, we're ready to decide whether or not we're going to awaken our spiritual path. Prompts such as this continue throughout a life to prevent us from missing the opportunity. Our spiritual path guide will continue patiently to prompt us as they've been contracted to do until we open up to this and however much we open up to it in any given stage of our life. Other people have guides who are in support of our service work. Not everyone comes to live a life in service, so we may or may not have a guide for this. If we're here to be of service, such as being a healer, being a radiator who provides positive energy for entire communities, being a creator who brings new energies and possibilities into the world and so on, then our service guide will support us in doing so when or if we open up to this as part of our embodied life. Some people remember what service they're here to perform from the get-go. Or, better stated, they never forget while they forget everything else about the pre-planning they did for this life. Others will unfold to their service in the same way and the same timing as they would with a spiritual path. Spiritual paths refer to the becoming of the individual, while service work entails skills or services offered for the betterment of others. These two things cannot and should not be the same, as this would be codependent and unhealthy. However, they can be intertwined to an extent which at times can make it seem as if they're inseparable. If the person is whole in themselves, maintaining their own spirituality and becoming, then their service work unfolds from that to support others, which gives positive feedback to the person serving. If the person is serving in order to be healed of something themselves, or create a wholeness they've not created on their own, then there's imbalance which needs to be healed and the service needs to be unwound a bit from the spiritual practice. A service guide works to help us maintain this balance and supports us in being as effective as possible through all aspects of our service throughout the embodied life. There are additional specialized guides who can help keep these types of service in sync with the ongoing planetary paradigm shift. So now that you have a better idea of who you're talking to and what they're doing for you, here are some ways that you can get better, clearer, and more conscious communication going with them. With all of these suggestions, you need to remember communication takes two parties. It's a conversation, not a movie or a binge on Netflix, so you need to be as active in each process as they are. 1. Give them permission to provide you clear messages when you're dreaming. In general, just as they aren't allowed to show up in a vision while you're driving or in a meeting with someone, they aren't allowed to pop into your dreams and start giving you directions on how to fix whatever problem you're working through. They can, they just aren't allowed. You can give them explicit permission to be more direct in your dreams and to help you remember those dreams. You can do this in a number of ways, such as going into meditation and explicitly say you're adjusting the contract so they can work this way with you. Don't request that they do so. State that they can. Remember, you're the leader of the team and the only one who has authority to make this adjustment. You can also do this through prayer and any means by which you practice prayer. You can state this when you're preparing to sleep, so not only is the statement going out to them, but also so you'll be open and receptive to their response. If you work with altars, you can write the statement out, then put it on the altar and activate it through prayer or lighting incense or lighting a candle. I recommend doing this hours prior to sleeping, as you shouldn't sleep with a lit candle for safety reasons, and having active prayers going on your altar can keep you from sleeping at all. 2. Set specific times when you're available to receive message. Daily or weekly, you can state you're available for message from them. Keep a regular-ish schedule or select a specific place or activity which signals you're ready to receive message from them. If they know when in time you're going to be available, they can have the message ready to go. Having a specific geographic location in the world or in your home can help you get used to letting the regular world drop away and put you in the right frame of being for receiving their wisdom. It also signals to them it's time to start communicating. I recommend when you do this, you don't come with a bunch of questions. Instead, ask your questions or send out your requests throughout the day and week so they have time to work on them. Then be open to the answers during your specified time and place. You can also ask that the information come in a more clear fashion than a random feeling or a fortune cookie statement. It might not be possible for them to provide it in any other manner, depending on other factors, but if it is, then you'll be relieved to have to work just that much less to gain clarity. 3. Make sure what you're asking is not too general or too specific for a response. One of the biggest frustrations I hear from guides is their person asks for something so generic they don't have any way to answer it, such as, "What do I need to know for my best and highest good?" For most people, any answer to this question would contain world peace, as well as a healthy salad and everything in between. Your guides don't have the right to select one thing from all of those possibilities, as doing so has a great possibility of interfering with your free will, so they remain silent. Questions or requests which are too specific often get the "silence is the best answer" response. The best example of this is the young person who just has to date this other person. They just have to! They pray to make it happen, talk to anyone who will listen, and put the not inconsiderable weight of all their energy into it, and yet it doesn't happen. Or it does, with not the best results ever. Guides aren't able to interfere with a life, so they can't stop you from any of this, but they won't help to achieve something which can't be achieved. The other person's free will is just as important as yours, and they can't interfere with it. So make sure what you're asking for is between these two extremes. Be directed in what you want, but not so specific it's impossible to deliver. And 4, meet your guides halfway. You can work with your guides directly in the Akashics. Think of it as the opposite of receiving messages through dreams. Instead of them coming to you during your sleep, you come to them when you're awake. In my Akashic Records Level 1 class, I introduce students to their own room in the Akashics. This is their own personal space. It's filled with items which are symbols for aspects of their lives here and provides a private space for them to work. This is where they meet their animal guide and do personal work on any or all aspects of their current life, as well as get a clearer picture of what is going on for them in various aspects. It's a great way to get an eagle's eye view of what's going on so you can see the bigger picture in events. In this room, you can invite your guides to meet with you for direct conversation. They can present themselves in an embodied form, which represents their personality and their role, then speak with you directly concerning any matter you choose, or respond to questions and requests you've already made. For those of you who are already my students, you can do this easily using the meditations from class. Simply think you'll meet one of your embodied life guides rather than an animal guide when you enter your room, and this will send out the invitation to your guides. If you think you'll meet one, then only one will respond. If you think you'll meet the entire team, then they'll all be invited. This isn't a summons, so they may not all appear, but it will be more likely than not. For those of you who aren't yet my students, I've created a meditation, Meeting Your Guides, which you can use. I'll put a link to it in the podcast description. Everyone has guides who are supporting them in this embodied life. We can improve the amount of support we receive by actively participating in the communication process. I know that as we move through life, every little bit helps. And that's all the time we have this week. If you're interested in knowing more, check out my website, akashicreading.com. Thank you to my patrons of honor this week, Lourdes and Nisha Modi. If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider supporting it by subscribing on Patreon. You can join in patron-only classes, see all my other offerings, and get regular updates about what I'm working on at patreon.com/TerryUchtena. Thanks. Bye.